Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
I'd kind of recognized together with some friends that the only way to really sort of drive sustainable development and empowering people in environments like Cambodia was to have a business model. One thing that you see often is that the NGOs are throwing money at things, which is fine if it's like a disaster situation, right? But if you want something that's going to continue after the end of the donor money, you need to have something that's going to be self-sustaining. And kind of we recognized this fairly early on.
Hi, folks. I would like to introduce myself. My name is Payal, and I am a traveler who also loves to meet people. And I think a blend of both is where this concept of melting pot has come about. In my melting pot series, I will be talking to lots of inspiring people from different parts of the world and also from different cultures, whom I meet during all my travels. The common factor between these folks will be the desire to follow their passion and make it a way of life. So step into this melting pot and enjoy the chats.
Hi, everyone. Today, I am in conversation with this very dynamic lady. I'm talking to Debbie Watkins. Debbie is CEO and she's the co-founder of Lucy, which is a neobank and a financial technology company. Of course, we're going to hear all about this from Debbie. Thank you so much, Debbie, for joining in and having this conversation with me today.
Oh, thanks, Payal, and thanks so much for inviting me, of course.
I know. I mean, you have, it's so interesting what you are doing and the kind of platform that you are providing for entrepreneurial women. So, but before we start talking about Lucy and, you know, what it stands for and what went behind you actually setting it up, it would be interesting for me and the listeners and the viewers to know a little bit more about you, your background, and you know, where you originally from and what was that like. And then, you know, I understand from doing research on you that you've lived outside of your home country for close to 20 years and have been in Asia. So that would be an interesting journey for you to share with all of us.
Sure. Yeah. So as you mentioned, I mean, I was actually born and raised in the UK. And until the turn of the millennium, I would say I had a fairly kind of normal high-flying type corporate life, I guess. I kind of progressed through sort of increasing senior roles in mainly banking and IT, also with ERP systems as well. And then kind of everything changed. I unexpectedly got made redundant early in 2000, and it coincided with relationships ending and various other things. And I just thought, you know, if I don't go out and see the world now, I'm never going to do it. And so... Right. Yeah. It just also coincided with some friends of mine from London who'd taken a year out from their corporate jobs to go backpacking. So they said, well, hey, why don't you come and meet up with us? And I was like, sure, where are you going to be in January? And they were like, Cambodia. And I'm, where's Cambodia? And so I went to the travel agent and they said, where's Cambodia? And because it was, you know, very, very new place at the time. Yeah. And so, I mean, just to give you an idea about sort of really how ill prepared I was, I had to go to the nail salon and get my nails removed, to actually go borrow backpacks, all kinds of things. But anyway, the time that I'd spent there really just changed my whole perspective of things. And I kind of decided that I would take more time to actually see where that side of things went. Cambodia was quite impactful, I would say, from my perspective anyway, just really seeing sort of what the legacy was of the genocide and the subsequent civil war, but also how this had really impacted people who really had nothing, had sort of lost everything and were really kind of struggling to try and find their way. So I started out volunteering. I got involved with various NGOs, started doing some consulting in accounting systems implementation. That evolved into doing some consulting in core banking systems implementation. And that's kind of really when I got first involved in microfinance. So I would say that was early, sort of late 2001, early 2002. At the same time, I'd kind of recognized together with some friends that the only way to really sort of drive sustainable development and empowering people in environments like Cambodia was to have a business model. That, you know, one thing that you see often is that the NGOs are throwing money at things, which is fine if it's like a disaster situation, right? But if you want something that's going to continue after the end of the donor money, you need to have something that's going to be self-sustaining. And kind of we recognized this fairly early on. And so set up two social enterprises in Cambodia, one of which was a travel company. And one of which made home and fashion accessories from recycled plastic bags. And bear in mind, this is kind of, say, the early part of the century, and nobody really knew the word social enterprise. And so I had to use like five sentences to explain what this was. And they're all saying, well, hang on a second, are you a business or are you an NGO? You know, and you're like, yeah. Well, no, this is what we're doing. And they're like, oh, is that really a thing? And yeah, so things just kind of evolved from there. So I ended up kind of being recommended by MFIs that I'd been involved with. They recommended me to other MFIs in Cambodia. That kind of then went into other countries. We moved, I got married to somebody I met in Cambodia. So that was, we then kind of,
So you were essentially meant to go to Cambodia.
Yes, exactly. And yeah. And it was completely just one of those coincidences. A mutual friend who was also traveling at the same time. And then we kind of moved together to Laos, where we were also for 2 years. I started consulting in Africa. Moving around all over the place. I then got a role with Mercy Corps in Indonesia. Again, focused on financial inclusion, spent 2 years there, 2 years in Bangladesh as well, focused on mobile financial services, and then went to the Netherlands for a couple of years, but again was very much focused on helping financial institutions to increase their outreach and relevance through a combination of customer-centric product design and leveraging technology in a smart and efficient way. And that's kind of really what the majority of my career has been about since I left the UK. And during that time, I've probably worked in about 38 countries, literally everywhere from DR Congo to Pakistan to Papua New Guinea.
You were there physically or you were managing these remotely? Because all these countries have very different ecosystems and, you know, and the culture and the philosophy of how the microfinancing industry probably works towards. I think it's hard for you to have done that remotely, right?
Yes, absolutely. No, I went and stayed in each of these countries. Quite sort of, I think I went to DR Congo twice, Pakistan four or five times, Ethiopia like 20 times. So, and so, yes, I've kind of really very much immersed myself in all of the sort of cultures there, everywhere from sort of like, you know, the slums in Jakarta through to rural farmers in Nepal, and pretty much everywhere in between. And, you know, an important thing, of course, is that there's a massive difference, obviously, culturally, geographically, demographically, between all different cultures and countries, but also between urban and rural, of course. Right. Yeah. So, you know, the type of livelihoods, the cash flows, the accessibility to bank branches, the penetration rate of mobile technology, you know, all of these things vary significantly depending upon where you are. But a lot of what I was really focused on was working at how can we actually bring responsibly priced financial services to people wherever they happen to be.
Interesting. So what brought you to Singapore?
Well, I was approached by one of the core banking technology providers to actually set up a regional head office for them. And I actually chose Singapore. And again, it was just one of those things. I kind of did an evaluation of the sort of the regulatory environments, the sort of ease of doing business, all of these side of things, and decided that Singapore was the best place to be. For the company, particularly given that sort of their client base was Myanmar, Cambodia, Papua New Guinea, Vietnam, you know, and all places that were very accessible from Singapore.
Yeah.
And so I kind of, again, upped the family, moved them all again, and started the regional office here in 2014, and sort of ended up with about 50 plus people across three different countries, looking after Asia Pacific, Middle East, and Africa.
And then Lucy happened, right?
Yes.
So what I hear from, you know, your experiences starting from Cambodia, it's obviously your forte has always been in the corporate world with technology and with microfinancing, right? So, but the focus it's very holistic, but it's never been like centered around women, you know, or helping women, right? So women entrepreneurs or women from a different financial background. So that was never, clearly that was not the focus at the time, but with Lucy, it's completely women-centric. So how did that progression happen, and how did that switch happen, and how did you actually decide to set up Lucy, and what is Lucy? So all of those questions, I kind of leave it to you to answer now.
Right. Yeah. Well, as with all of these things, it was something that kind of evolved as well. So, you know, all of the places that I was working, and bear in mind that I was doing a lot of work in tech, but also consulting for financial institutions.
Yeah.
And speaking at lots of conferences as well. And what I was kind of seeing was a couple of things. First of all, that the vast majority of the management that I was working with in the various financial institutions were male. You know, statistically, globally, 98% of bank management is male. What I was also really seeing was that in many cases, there was a degree of, I guess you could really call it complacency, in actually understanding and tailoring products to different groups of potential customers. It's very much always been this kind of one size fits all.
Yeah.
You know, which actually translates as one size fits none, because it doesn't really solve the problems of anybody. It kind of does, but not quite, right? So so it was a combination of these things. Also seeing that you know, the tendency, I think, is for people to design products for people like them. And And so what you kind of get is this just lack of understanding that there's a group of people here who need completely different things, because it's really difficult, right, to see life through other people's eyes and actually to kind of work out what it is that they need.
And it's also convenient to not have to do that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, especially when you're still kind of getting good business, you know. Yeah. So like, you know, banks would always say, well, you know, we're giving loans. As long as we get the loans repaid, is this helping this group of people to build their businesses? Well, we don't know. And we don't really care, to be honest with you. As long as they pay their loan, we'll just give them another loan. Right. So it's that kind of attitude. But also, you know, everywhere I've been, say everywhere from like Kinshasa to Lahore and everywhere in between, you know, you go outside and you see the markets and the bustling nature of the business. And a large percentage of this is women. Right. You know, they're juggling 50,000 things at the same time. They've got the kids here. They're trying to keep the house clean. They're trying to cook the food. They're trying to run this small shop from the front of their house, you know, all of these things at the same time. And so it was kind of just something that I'd really seen, this disconnect between what people actually really needed and who needed it, and what banks and financial institutions were really wanting to or could be bothered to do. So what happened was in 2017, 2018, just I got introduced to Luke, who's one of my co-founders. And he had set up a company that was building apps for large institutions, including banks. And someone says, you should really have a chat to him. And we sat down and had a chat and ended up putting the world to rights when it came to banks, because he'd seen a similar thing from a different direction, right? That he'd been building digital banking platforms for banks and realized that their underlying offerings were really leaving something to be desired. And of course, building something digital on top of that doesn't make the underlying thing right. All you've got now is a digital product that doesn't solve a problem, right? So, and, you know, and he was going back and saying, well, hey, you know, these products are not really going to resonate, even if you put a nice app on top of it. And was kind of almost getting this kind of attitude of like, well, we hired you to build an app, not to tell us about other stuff.
Right.
And, you know, too many of them, too much bureaucracy, lack of innovation, I think he was finding quite frustrating, and had kind of seen that, again, there was a real need for, you know, what is now really called neobanks, of course, right, which is building digital first solutions that actually address the needs of particular segments. So, and we kept kind of just reconnecting at various stages. He'd also been introduced to Hal, my other co-founder, who was the CEO of a bank in Myanmar at the time, having spent a long career with the World Bank as well. And he'd seen, again, similar things from a completely different direction, that women who came to his bank for loans were consistently better payers than their male counterparts, but that he wasn't getting very many women. And so we spent a kind of year on and off just kind of reconnecting and saying, this is terrible, someone should do something about it. And then finally said, maybe we should just do something about it. And
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
That's really literally how it came about.
Interesting, interesting. So, so now if you could, you know, just talk a little more about Lucy, and I mean, I understand it's an app. So you've kind of got, again, IT and digital technology with microfinancing. You've kind of put it together, but it's very, very focused on helping women, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so the approach here has been to go literally from the other end, right? Which is to say, what is it that people need? What are the pain points that different groups are facing? What are their aspirations? And how can we actually really help to solve for that by designing something that actually addresses the pain points rather than starting with the solution and trying to retrofit it? And so we kind of had seen increasingly now, you can read as well online, like globally, it's recognized that women are disproportionately underserved when it comes to financial services. They're also disproportionately underserved when it comes to sort of helping them grow and develop as entrepreneurs. And so that was the kind of direction that we really felt that we wanted to go, was actually to look at different groups of women and say, what is the particular issue that this group is having? And how can we come up with products and services that actually really meet their needs, rather than saying starting from the classic products? So what we decided to do was to start in Singapore for a couple of reasons. Firstly, that it made sense to sort of start somewhere that had a high sort of digital penetration rate, of course, if we're starting with an app, right? But secondly, because we had also recognized that, contrary to what a number of people may think, there are actually underserved segments in Singapore when it comes to banking. And the two main groups really are the kind of micro or solopreneurs, who would often tend to be mothers juggling families and a part-time business at home and all sorts of other things at the same time, and foreign domestic workers, and who are entrepreneurial by nature, because that's what's brought them to Singapore in the first place. You know, their aim is to save enough money to go back home to their family and start a small business.
Yeah.
And so we'd recognize that, although sort of on the face of it, these two groups seem quite different, actually there's kind of quite a lot more that unites them than divides them. And so what we did really was spent a lot of time then looking at different challenges that they had, and what was should be available to them but wasn't available to them. And then we've designed a sort of suite of financial services sort of specifically to help them sort of juggle all the various aspects of their lives.
So what are the different financial services that Lucy offers?
Yeah, so what we're providing right now are fee-free accounts with a virtual and physical debit MasterCard. We're providing low-cost digital remittances. We're providing named savings pockets, which enables you to set up multiple pockets for different things that you're saving towards and put a name and a goal against each one. We also enable you to set up an account with a card that's going to be used by somebody else. So, for example, you can set up an allowance account for your child and give the card to your child, but keep a track on the finances. You can set up a groceries account and give the card to your helper, but keep a track on the groceries. All of this is completely kind of user driven. So you can just set them all up on the app immediately. And what we will be doing going forwards is adding in small business lending. We're adding in, we've already got actually earned wage access, which enables your helper to draw down on her salary during the month based upon the number of days that she's worked so far. And we are including a whole range of business building and community tools, particularly for entrepreneurs. Again, because one thing that we've recognized here is that having access to financial services is one part of the equation, but it's not the whole picture. Really what solopreneurs need in particular is access to sort of low cost and quality training, access to integrated accounting for someone who's not an accountant, access to a community of peers who can actually help out with advice. All of these things are kind of something that really then can help solo and micro entrepreneurs to feel very much supported as they're starting and growing their businesses. And so that's really our aim, is to combine tailored financial services and business building tools all together.
Wow, that's interesting. So it's like a one-stop shop, and you have access to all the needs that are important to you.
Yes.
That's interesting. Yeah. So what are some of the, some case studies that, you'd like to share about where you've seen a transformation with a client or a group of clients, something that's tangible, where you have seen that Lucy has made a difference?
Yes. Well, I mean, we're still quite early days. We just launched at sort of the second half of last year, well, kind of third quarter, actually. And so we're still kind of in very much in sort of growth and sort of getting out there mode. But we have seen some really interesting patterns and had some great feedback from people. One of our customers actually said that she really felt that Lucy was like her big sister. And I thought that was just such a kind of great analogy, right? She felt, and that's really how we wanted it to feel, very, very personal and warm. What we've also seen is actually increasing number of helpers who, having sort of first of all just started sending remittances home, are now actually using their own Lucy debit card to buy things online on websites in their home country and get those things delivered to the family, right? Which is giving them much more control over how their money is spent, which is extremely important, right? So they're saying, rather than just sending the cash home and not really knowing how it's being used, they're actually saying, okay, you want a TV, you want a whatever, I'll buy it and get it delivered. And that way I know that the money's going where it's supposed to be going. That's been a really interesting thing as well. The other thing that we've been seeing is that despite the fact that Singapore would seem to be quite saturated when it comes to banking, and despite the fact that generally most neobanks would be your second or third bank relationship, the usage that we've been seeing has been more in line with what someone's first bank account would be. And so it's not just that they've got Lucy only to buy things online, for example. We're seeing it being used in the supermarket, in cafes, on the bus and the MRT, general day-to-day stuff, which is great from our perspective, because it's really showing that people are actually finding this just as useful and probably more user-friendly than their regular bank account.
Interesting. Yeah. And like you're saying, it's just, your third quarter. So as it develops, as you see, the kind of responses from the clients, you can try and bring in more things, right?
Exactly.
And make it sort of more personal.
Yes.
And cater to different needs of, needs that you probably haven't thought of. But, as you go along, I guess it'll be interesting to then get a better understanding and incorporate more and more needs, because with technology, it's possible to do that, right?
Yes. And, one thing we've also seen as well is we've had a couple of in-person events for our customers. I've done some workshops on business model strategy, because it's something I've got a lot of personal background in. And I thought that it would be nice for some of our solo micro entrepreneurs, if they were interested, to actually have some kind of face-to-face time And of course, I think everyone's desperate for face-to-face time now, right? You know, I think one thing that we do recognize as well is, despite being a digital first platform, these personal connections are actually kind of really important as well. And so that is very much guiding sort of how do we make delivery through an app with the cost effectiveness that that brings. How can we bring that level of that personal feeling into that and combine it as necessary with some sort of offline type activities too?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, now that it's possible to do it, it makes sense. Yeah, no, you're right. The personal interface always helps, you know, because it kind of brings a perspective that you may not have thought about, but when you're listening to someone like speaking to you and giving you ideas, I think it makes sense. Yeah, no, that's interesting. So outside of Singapore, I know it's still early days, but are there any other countries within Southeast Asia that you have thought about as, you know, rolling out Lucy 2 in the next couple of years or in the near future?
Yes. And I mean, the logical next steps for us would be, like, say, Indonesia and the Philippines, just because, again, first of all, it's the home country of a lot of the helpers. But yeah. Secondly, because they are big, big countries that are very largely micro enterprise driven. And so, you know, we've got lots of interesting statistics there about the percentage of micro entrepreneurs that are really underserved by formal financial institutions. So there's a huge gap there between what people actually have and what people need. Hong Kong for us is another interesting area because demographically it's similar to Singapore, but also, like, one of our primary investors is based there. But I think what's also been very interesting is that, you know, when I first posted on LinkedIn that we were starting Lucy, I had people that I knew from all over the place saying, you should really bring Lucy here. And this was literally everywhere from Ethiopia to England. And I think that's kind of interesting as well. And what we've recognized that this is not a developed world problem. It's not a developing world problem. It's a kind of universal issue,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
As that women entrepreneurs just don't have access to everything that they really need. And, you know, we also know Melinda Gates quotes this quite often, you know, that empowering women entrepreneurs to succeed actually helps everybody, right? It helps women and men.
Yeah.
If women-owned businesses can realize their potential. So it's been very interesting. We've had quite a number of people who've connected with us from a whole range of different places, from sort of Egypt to Zambia to Australia, literally saying, you know, we'd like to talk about how we can possibly bring Lucy here.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. And I guess, you know, you obviously have to take it step by step, establish it, make sure that the model works beautifully till you move on to another country, because every country will come with its own set of, you know, not problems, but its own set of challenges. So but interesting, yeah. Interesting. I mean, it's, and I don't know if you have the app, because what I really find interesting is, you know, all the women, the design of the app is absolutely spectacular. So I don't know if you can, not for the people who are listening, but for the viewers, if you can just show them what it looks like and what went behind the design, what kind of prompted you into creating something like this?
Yeah. Yeah, let me just open the app up and I can just show you. So again, the aim was really to be personal, right? Which is also why we called the app Lucy and not XYZ Bank.
So, right, so a bit like Alexa or like Siri.
Yeah, so we wanted, and you know, we've also thought about the wording like how we wanted the language to be like as well. So again, kind of informal, little bit irreverent, welcoming. I don't know if you can see.
There
we go. Okay, so this just kind of gives you an idea of what the screen looks like. All the different accounts here are my accounts that I've configured. Right. So it's really easy to navigate. The key thing I like here is if I click here, there we go. I can change the background. I don't know if you can see that now, but I've got a new background.
I can see the background, but yeah.
It's changed, right? And even the menu here, the color of the menu actually changes to be coordinated with the background. So if I had the blue one here, for example, you can see this, right? That if I look at the menu, the menu's now blue, whereas it was gold before.
It's just
it's minor details, but the whole point is here, I can set up all these accounts that I have and give them names of whatever I want. I can have separate cards for them. And so it really kind of helps me to kind of compartmentalize my expense management, but also my savings, and just very, very easy to use.
Excellent. That's very, very interesting. Thank you, Debbie, for sharing this with your journey, as well as, you know, Lucy and what it offers to my listeners and viewers, and of course to me. Good luck. And I think, you know, I think it's going to make a huge difference for women entrepreneurs, you know, and people who, especially women who don't have an opportunity otherwise to be in control of their finances. I think it's just so user-friendly from, you know, whatever I've kind of researched and whatever I see about it. So good luck.
Thank you.
Fascinating, and hopefully, you know, you will be able to, outside of Singapore, Indonesia, and Philippines, also be able to spread Lucy across the globe.
Yes, that's certainly our aim. Thank you so much, and it's been delightful to be on here. And thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you, Debbie. You take care.
Okay, bye bye.
Bye bye.
For more weekly conversations, do listen to Melting Pot on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Follow us on YouTube and on Instagram at Podcast Melting Pot. So until the next episode, this is Payal signing off.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.